Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Faith Church Podcast. I'm your host, Jay Williams, and joining me today is Christoph Katzbeck.
Good morning, Jay.
That was my rock station energy.
That was great.
Was bringing right there.
Wow. Okay.
Well, it wasn't really my rock station. It was more like the fun morning show. I think that's what I would have been.
You're trying to be like the fun,
yeah,
fun
morning show. Yeah, hey, everybody. You know, not the guy like 96.7 on rock.
Is there a specific reason that you've been inspired to go full?
No, it's just
morning show host.
No, I just listened to myself and I was like, man, you sound like a cheesy morning show host right now.
No, everybody loves it. It's not cheesy. It's great.
Well, it is. Hey, what else is great? We're gonna do a little test here. Okay, before we get to talk about the message, which is awesome, I want a little bit of, I want to test if people. What do people think about this sound?
I think it sounds amazing.
Doesn't it sound amazing?
To me, that sounds like productivity.
It does. Here, I'll do it again, only closer.
Did you even have to bring it closer, though? That's the real question.
No, I mean, all right. So if people don't know what that is, do you remember when you do a game where you're like, what's that sound?
Guess the sound?
Guess
oh, yeah.
the sound.
Oh, yeah.
They used to do that on the radio morning
shows. Yeah, I used
shows.
To do that. I did that on a morning rock radio show over a Christmas season one time. I remember.
What?
Anyways, yeah.
Do you remember what the sound was?
No. Oh. I have no idea. I wasn't in charge of that. That was the other guy who was in charge of that. I was just there to be like, whoa, that's crazy. What? Oh, man. that was that guy.
That's a good role for you.
Yeah,
all right,
yeah.
Let's see if you can do that here today. So that is the sound of a mechanical keyboard, if you were wondering.
Yeah, it is. Okay.
Which has become all the rage now.
Well, all the rage between you and Jeff. You're catching up to Christoph from like 15 years
there's
ago.
Like,
I'm proud of you guys.
There's like 3,000 YouTube channels out there that are dedicated only to mechanical keyboards.
It's true. I'm so excited that you guys got into this world because it was one of the things that I have loved for a long time.
Yeah.
And then Jeff got one and now you have one. And so tell me, how do you feel about your mechanical? Maybe
I don't know
explain
yet.
To people.
No, I don't really want to explain to people.
Okay, all right.
They can look it up.
Okay.
This is like old keyboards. It's like what I played Number Munchers and Space or an Oregon Trail and everything on. It
should give people hope for those who think that we're just going technologically too far. That
no,
there are people.
It doesn't give anybody any hope.
No,
for
there
that.
Are people that are people. Like, they're going backwards. They want to go back to.
But they're not. They're just recycling.
Feeling.
Recycling. Right. They do want to go back to a tactile feeling until they don't anymore. But the point being. That it is, I will say, it does feel like you're doing more.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, like, my normal keyboard is.
You can barely hear it, yeah.
And, but this keyboard.
So great.
The only problem is I'm a little lazy in my typing, so it's the travel on the keys is big, and so you have to, like, push down farther.
Do you feel like it has, like, revealed deficiencies in your typing?
There are no deficiencies in my typing.
Okay, all right.
I type 312 words a minute.
I'm sure you do. Look at you. You go.
I don't know how many words I'm a pretty fast typer. That's like one of the few things.
There's a website where you can race.
We did
each
that
other.
One time.
Here?
Yes.
No.
I was not here for that. Well, I don't know. I don't know where you were, but we all did it. It may have been before we hired you, but we all did it. And guess who was the best?
Leslie.
Nope.
Okay.
Definitely. No, I don't know why, but I do have deficiencies in my typing. I'm like anybody else. Most people don't type exactly. They don't hit every key exactly. You know,
you can't all be perfect.
But yeah, man, I like Olympics. Put me in, coach.
The Olympics keyboard. Mechanical keyboard Olympics. Would that be winter or summer?
That's a really great question. That'd be the spring games.
The spring games.
Yeah, they're going to start a new one. It's just like one event. It'll be all the events that I could be good at. This is the thing about me is I feel like I have a particular set of skills, but they're not helpful. Like I feel like my skills are just other than I hope that I can handle God's word well and do that. But outside of that world,
I don't think you would say that's true.
And it's always like, I feel like, well, my best achievements, it's like nobody cares. So like, you know, when somebody says, oh, when they find out, like I played sports in college. Oh, wow. What'd you play? Tennis. Oh, like it's always a letdown. I went to Cornell.
Sure.
Oh, no, not that one.
Not that,
oh,
yeah.
Like there's a consistent.
Feel that. Yeah.
That's just kind of the story of my life.
Yeah.
And so, I'm a really fast runner. Runner? No. Thinker? No. Typer.
Typer. Yes, sir.
Yay. But I think that does connect to external processing. Sure. I think to be a really fast typer, you both have to have the mechanical, like your what's the micro, not the micro, but
the hand-eye coordination?
Yeah, the motor function, like the fine motor skills.
Fine motor, you got there. Look at you.
I don't have fine motor thinking, but I have deduction. Fine motor skills. You have to have fine motor skills, and then you have to have quick external processing. I think those would be the ways that you get the type. I don't know.
Man, thank
whatever.
You for sharing. Dude, that actually, is that just a subtle way for you to flex some of your lesser known skills?
Yeah, man. Let's see if I can come up. I'll come up with some others. I pour a mean bowl of cereal. So my milk to cereal ratio is on point.
You would be a rock star in our household.
I get like all the key is you got to spread it out as you're pouring it overall. So all the cereal gets hit by it.
The milk or the cereal?
The milk. The cereal just goes in there and then the milk goes over the surface of the cereal and then you fill it up just a little bit. If you try to drown the cereal, then it's too much. But if you just pour it in all haphazard and don't put in enough to drown it, then you have a lot of dry cereal at the top and nobody likes, we've already discussed this, nobody likes dry cereal.
I'm sure this is why everyone fast forward to listen to podcast.
We are 6 minutes in. This was even a long thing for a mechanical keyboard. So speaking of good ground, you preached on good ground. Now you said good parable of good ground.
Yeah.
And not good soil.
Yeah.
So, did you explain that in the message? Because I missed
did not,
a little part.
No,
okay.
That was one of those.
Well, that's
things.
Question number one.
Yeah, yeah. There were so many things. This was one of those sermons.
Wait, you got a lot of questions?
No, I had a lot of things that I.
Oh.
Like I felt a lot of directions I could have gone.
Yeah. All right. So
a lot of stuff that felt like it kind of got.
And I forgot my notes today, so I'm having to remember them on the fly. So go ahead though. But why? First of all, tell me that. Why did you say good ground instead of good soil? The parable of good soil.
Well, so first of all, most of our Bibles reference it as the parable of the sower. And so the heading over it is the parable of the sower. And I was actually really challenged by Jeff's sermon last week where he was asking us to rethink the title. And I thought that actually fit here because, yeah, the sower is really important, but the sower is by no means the kind of focal point of the teaching and of the parable. The focal point is the ground that is receiving the seed that the sower is throwing. And so those who are listening are the ground, right? I kind of avoided using the word soil and I used ground instead because to me, soil kind of gives this idea of it being being fertile to plant. And so soil automatically jumps to the idea of it being good ground. And not all of it was good ground. Some of it was rocky ground, some of it was thorny ground, some was a path, right? So it wasn't really even soil, it was a path. Right. But it was all ground, like it was getting thrown on the ground. So I was just trying to rethink and maybe reimagine what was Jesus trying to specifically teach and who was he specifically trying to teach with this parable? And if that's the focal point, like how do we then, what would we then name it based upon that? And so that was kind of the idea. Because there's really three like general elements. You've got the sower, who is God. You have the seed, which is the gospel, the word of the kingdom, which he is throwing. And then you have all of the grounds that are receiving. And as he's unpacking and explaining the parable, he's saying like, hey, these are the different types of ground. These are the different types of people who are receiving the word, and here's how they are responding to it. So to me, kind of reverse engineer and go, I think this actually would be better named the parable of good ground. So if whenever I think of the prodigal son, instead I'm thinking of the whole family and I'm thinking all the lessons learned with that, I'm thinking the same way. I'm thinking of the ground, the parable of the different types of grounds.
Interesting. So you think you can just rename things in the Bible?
Well, to be fair, those headings are not originally in the Bible to begin with.
What?
So
wait, what?
I feel okay.
Truth bombs being dropped
pushing
here on the
back
Faith Church podcast. This is going to go viral.
All right, there we go.
It's going to go viral. No, that is true. And I joke, but that is obviously a thing that we have to remember that, yes, the headings, the chapters, like none of those things are there. And part of it when... I'm not going to speak authoritatively about when they're making these decisions, when they're producing a Bible, but when a parable has been named something historically, what I've seen is they don't tend to change that unless there's a big reason to, because it's more of just an identifier. You know, you have to remember again, scripture was passed down orally forever, for hundreds and hundreds of years. like 1500 years, like before the printing press, the New Testament would have been passed down, and the Old Testament for thousands of years before that. So you would label these things of these narratives and these stories. And so I do think that a lot of times, my guess is that in the room, there's probably somebody who's saying, well, this really shouldn't be called the parable of the sower, but it's like, well, it's what everybody has been naming it, or the parable of, you know, the good soil.
Well, and if I can eat crow for just a minute, Jesus himself literally calls it the parable of the sower. So kind of get in trouble with that one there.
That's true.
Literally here in verse 16, hear then the parable of the sower. So, sorry, verse 18.
So you changed?
Verse 18.
So you're basically saying, okay, well, Jesus, listen, look, that was a working title. That was a working title.
I know somebody's
like when you're reading a film script,
well,
it gets passed around, and they went through some revisions. That's why he had to explain it.
Oh, my goodness.
It's like script revisions. No, listen, it's okay.
It's a title of a sermon.
It is. Well, but then here's your argument there. The argument that you can make is, well, Jesus was saying that to that specific people. Now, I would argue, I do think it's so interesting. I think that the way you took it was great. And, you know, Jeff had said last week that a parable is a story that has one main point. And I always feel like, I understand why he says that. So he's not here to defend himself. That is the traditional view of a parable. And it is true. There is a main point to a parable, but that main point can be made from different angles.
Oh, for sure.
And yeah. I think that's the thing. So we want to guard ourselves from thinking that, oh, a parable has a lot of different main points and it's communicating all these different things. No, a parable is communicating one main thing. But then the ditch we fall into is we think it's communicating one main thing, and we make that main thing sometimes too small. We reduce it a little bit, and then we only say it's coming from this angle. And that's not true. So in the prodigal son, it does say something about who the father is, and it says something about who the son is and who the older brother is. And what does it mean that he's clothed in his best robes of like being clothed in righteousness and, you know, of the father? And like there's lots of layers to this main idea that of God's mercy and his grace and what's being offered, like how the gift of salvation or being a part of the kingdom, how that is solely from the Father to give as he, to give generously and graciously. And then I think in this, that when you say the parable, like of the sower, well, then you do get into a little bit of like some more reformed ideas of, well, is he intentionally sowing? Does the sower know? Is it haphazard that he's throwing it onto the rocky ground? Right, does he not realize where he's, is he indiscriminate? Because no farmer would waste seed on the path.
Right.
They're not going to just like go over there and die. I put it up. So we'll see what happens. Like I threw some seed on the path. Like they know full well. Now, obviously what they're talking about is inefficiency kind of thing as they're going around and scattering seed. Like some falls on the path. Like they don't aim for the path, but some does. But none of that is the point. Like it's not, this is not a parable talking about how God chooses to put some seed on rocky soil or whatever. That's not the point of it. The point is just an observational idea that this isn't going to take root in everyone, because there's a, just like seeds fall onto all kinds of different soil and different ground, so does the word of God. It falls on a lot of people, and there are different types of soils. What I think was interesting is, honestly, if he hadn't explained it all, I don't know that we would have interpreted it that specifically. Does that make sense? So that's what I'm talking about, like a parable. When we say like a parable is only one thing, I think that if he hadn't explained it, we would be like, no, you can't dig too much into what each one of those soils are. For whatever reason, he chooses to explain this parable, and the way he explains it is actually kind of a multi-level meaning.
Yeah. That's what I was trying to do as I was preaching through it. It was interesting. So peek behind the curtain. Normally after I finish writing my sermon, I have Sarah read it and she kind of gives me feedback on it. And, she was mentioning how, she thought, she's like, man, this, the second point should kind of go after the third point, and I was saying, you know, I'm really trying this time with this passage to remain faithful to how Matthew is presenting it. And I thought it was really interesting that he gives the parable, then he gives an explanation for parables, and then he explains the parable of the sower. And so with kind of my idea with like the first part was exactly that. If I were to read this parable without the explanation, like where would my mind go?
Yeah.
Like how would I have understood in that moment? I'm on the beach, I'm with the crowd, I'm hearing Jesus teach this. That's kind of what I experienced. The funny thing is, I didn't really go on this too long, but when I heard the parable as a teenager, I was sharing how I'd heard it as a teenager. That was my first impression, was like, oh, well, that's dumb. Why did he throw it on all those? Like, why waste the seed on those different grounds? That was my first impression before even knowing there was an explanation of it, which is why it makes it a really unique parable, I think.
I mean, it's unique for a lot of different reasons. I also think it's unique because you also get the interaction. So another thing that stood out to me was this, the interaction between Jesus and the disciples when they're saying, why do you speak in parables? And I always think that's really fascinating because we think of parables as something that clarifies, an illustration. Like when you tell a parable, like if you, we think of it like a sermon illustration.
Well, yeah, an illustration, yeah.
And something that will clarify. So I said this hard thing that you didn't understand, and then I explain it with this illustration. And the goal of any illustration, anybody will tell you, is that people would understand what you were saying. But Jesus does it a little differently. He actually speaks the content in the parable. So it's different than an illustration. So an illustration is, I say this concept, and then you're like, oh, I'm not sure if I understand that concept. Okay, well, let me give you an example, right? And so I say the content, then I give an example, and then you say, oh, okay, that makes sense. Now I understand the content. But Jesus just tells the parable. He just talks about like what the kingdom is like. He doesn't teach like, well, the kingdom, he doesn't teach a systematic teaching and then says, well, here, let me give you an illustration. Imagine a sower that goes out to the seed. No, the teaching is the parable. And the disciples are like, why do you do that? Why don't you just say what you point out in the sermon, which I thought was so great. You're like, why don't you just say what you mean? Like speak plainly. Why don't you just speak plainly?
Right.
And his answer is so profound and explains so much. I think if we see it of like how he functions in his ministry. And he basically says, well, because if I just said it, then people would understand. Like then everybody would just understand, but you understand because you have ears to hear. Like you have, like there's this idea that you have this, you've been given this understanding, and by speaking in parables, I'm speaking to like spirit to spirit.
Right. Right.
That it's either going to make sense or it's not going to make sense. And when it makes sense, it really makes sense. And when it doesn't, you're like, what is this guy talking about? And I think it goes to the idea that if Jesus had just wanted to come down and just intellectually convince people that he's God, if that was the goal, and if that's what actually led to life, then he would have done that.
Right.
And he could have in a lot of different ways. Not the least of which is he could have taken over Rome. Like he could have done all that. But the kingdom is subversive. The kingdom works like, it's like leaven, right? He over and over again uses these illustrations that it is something that is hidden that then will come to light. And the people who are seeking it will find it. But the people who aren't interested in it won't. I think about that in terms of, you know, it always used to confuse me when Jesus would heal somebody and then he'd say, don't go tell anyone.
Right, right.
He'd be like, why would you not want to go tell anyone? These are all connected ideas. Because when you go tell everybody, it's for people that aren't, they don't have ears to hear. Like they're not, they're like, oh, that's interesting. Like they want their bellies full. They want to see healings. They want to see all these things. The crowd will be drawn, but Jesus doesn't want that. It's much more subversive than that. And that just pushes against all of our sensibilities.
Well, I think it helps us exercise faith, right? Like it helps us exercise a trust in who God is and in what he's teaching, because there's going to be times where you go, I don't understand this, but I want to, You know, so there, like that was the other thing, because there are certainly times when, as a believer, you read something that Jesus said, and you're like, I don't understand, but I really want to. And I think that's even like a little bit of that component of like, it's kind of like the good ground that receives the seed and it hasn't even borne fruit yet, but it's in there and it's growing. And all it is it's dirt right now. All it does is look like dirt right now, but it's going to eventually grow. And I think he teaches in these parables, it is an actual opportunity and exercise for us to grow in our faith and love for him, because it forces us to get, and I said this towards the end, it forces us to be a little bit uncomfortable. It forces us to push a little bit back on our presuppositions of who God is and what life is about and what the meaning of purpose and meaning, all of that. And it goes, we have to surrender ourselves to go, well, I'm going to follow Jesus' way. And maybe I don't totally understand this right now, or maybe I'm beginning to see it, but like, as you're exercising that faith, he's going to continue to open those eyes. He's going to continue to open those ears and those hearts to hear and see those things. And so I think it's actually like a really tangible way for us to grow in that love for him. Cause like you said, Jesus could have very easily just came and proved who he was, you know, by any means. He could have overthrown the Roman Empire. He could have, you know, all those things. He created everything. Everything was created through him. But instead, he didn't. Why? And part of me goes like, it's because he wants us to love him. He wants us to pursue him. He wants us to have, you know, walk with him, not just obey him because intellectually we understand him as king, but because in our hearts, he is king of our hearts, not just king of our minds and in our actions.
Well, because his kingdom is not about us. Like, it's not, it's just right. Not about him gathering and subduing a people. He doesn't need to do that. Like, he created us as heirs, you know, to share in his glory. And so when he's communicating, I think it's interesting that when he says, you know, he says this phrase of like, when they ask, why do you speak to them in parables? He answered them, to you it has been given to know the secrets of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been given. Well, that's a hard saying. Like, who are you talking about? But he says, for to the one who has, more will be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away. And like they said, that this is why I speak to them in parables, because seeing they do not see, and hearing they do not hear, nor do they understand. So it's almost like he's saying, I speak in parables because if I spoke plainly, then people would think they understand.
Right.
And they don't.
Right.
And that's actually not helpful to them. It's not a loving thing to let people just say, oh yeah, no, that makes sense. But their heart isn't actually given over to Christ. And so when he says, for the one who has, more will be given and he will have an abundance, but for the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away. He's talking about understanding there. That if you truly understand, like if you truly see, if it's been given to you to know the secrets of the kingdom, then more is going to be given to you. You're going to start seeing this everywhere. Things are going to start clicking. You're going to start understanding. You're going to see more clearly. And you see that in the disciples. It's slow. But they get all the way to the point. You know, imagine Peter early on compared to the Peter who writes, you know, his epistles, you know, yeah, his letters. That's a different Peter. That Peter has a lot more wisdom than the one who is, you know, following Jesus around and asking wild questions, right? Like he's grown in that. More has been given to him. But to the one who doesn't have that, who can't see it, even what he has, even the picture of wisdom that they have, even the biblical understanding they have, it's going to be taken away.
Right. Well, and that's what Jesus then begins to unpack with this parable, which I think right. is just so neat that he, it's like, this, again, kind of the multifacetedness of the parable in itself. Yeah, the main point is about receiving the word of God and responding faithfully. But like another angle you can look at that is, well, this is actually how he's teaching parables as a whole. Like this actually helps to expand and understand why Jesus is teaching that way. One of the other things I was thinking about with this passage was how I think this is a really encouraging passage for people who are like serving in different ministry areas. And I was thinking, if I was using this as like a devotional for like my youth leaders or to anyone who's in any sort of like who do any sort of ministering, and doesn't even have to be within the church. It could be, you know, you with your family. It could be you with coworkers, et cetera. You're going to see this in action. You're going to see people who, you know, you say they what's been given to them will be the little that's been given will be taken away. Well, that's kind of like the seeds who fell on the rocky soil or in the thorns, and like, yeah, they began to sprout a little bit, but then they were choked out. They were scorched because there wasn't an actual understanding, because there wasn't a faith in Christ, because it was all these other things, and it killed anything that was there to begin with. And so I like, that was another, we're talking about like things that were kind of on the cutting room. I was thinking about how this has been so important to me in terms of thinking on how I minister to people, because it can be really discouraging. Sometimes you pour into somebody, maybe I think especially of like the person who receives the word initially with joy. But it's a rocky ground, and so it doesn't take root, and then it's scorched by the sun. You're going to experience that. You're going to experience people who it seems like, man, they have a genuine conversion or love for Jesus, and then it just completely goes away. And you go, what happened? Like, what happened? And Jesus is going, that's going to happen. And here's why, which is why, I don't know, I take comfort in this parable knowing, like, man, that's going to happen. Jesus said it was going to happen. My response to that isn't to just go off the deep end and start going, well, Jesus, why, you know, to bear the weight of that, but instead go, okay, God, I'm going to continue to be faithful no matter what. It's not my responsibility to deem what kind of ground a person is. My responsibility is to be faithful to loving them and ministering to them and caring for them, you know?
Yeah, well, I think it also is a warning to people in ministry to think about how do you actually measure fruit, or what do you look for when you're trying to see, okay, is this good ground? Like, is this, we tend to look to things like enthusiasm or correct theological understanding. But more and more what I look for is, are moments where they're demonstrating that they have surrendered their kingdom. And typically that'll show up in things that are either outside of their comfort zone. It'll show up in perseverance. So it's one thing when somebody's excited about, you know, the faith, and they hear something and that sounds like, it sounds like good news to them. And they're like, man, I'm going to be here every week. I'm going to do, this is how I'm going to live. And I love Jesus. And it's not that I don't believe them. Like, I don't think they're being disingenuous at all. But what has not happened is an understanding of the kingdom of God and their desire for it, like for God and his kingdom, like the whole thing. And that's where we kind of get into things like, no, I love Jesus. And I love what he did for me, but like, I'm still pursuing my own kingdom. And so I'm going to ask God to bless me. So for example, you talked about that of just, following Jesus when it's convenient or when it's positive. So like I'm in the word when like, oh, this is new and exciting, you know, like I would be in the world of mechanical keyboards, like, oh, right. Wow. Like this is new. This is interesting. And all of a sudden I'm like, really? And I see that a lot with people, and they're just like, man, I'm hungry for the word. Well, what happens on the days when you're not? And it's not about just like being disciplined, and like if they're a really disciplined person, then they'll probably persevere, but that could be attributable to their discipline. But their perseverance in, okay, things are hard and I'm still pursuing Jesus through this because I believe him. I believe that he is better, that his kingdom is better. Which then is interesting why in Matthew 13 ends up, you know, with the parable of the treasure hidden in a field. It doesn't end up with that, but that's later on in this chapter, as he's talking about the kingdom and saying like, that's what it looks like. When he says it's been given to you, the secrets of the kingdom has been given to you. Well, the secret is that it's a treasure in a field, that it fulfills everything, that if you seek first the kingdom, all these other things will be added unto you, that everything that you want, everything you are wired for, everything that you think means life or something that's worthwhile is encapsulated in this kingdom. And an all in, this leading to, I think about in John where like the bread of life and when the disciple or when all those people turn away, when Jesus says, unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood. And then he turns to the disciples and he says, where are you going to go to? And they say, where else are we going to go? Like, you have the words of eternal life. Like that's the kind of all in that they see it. And once you've seen it, you don't want anything else. Right. But if you haven't seen it, then other things will creep in there. The cares of the world will choke it out. Other things will it won't last because if you haven't seen it, like if you don't realize like, oh, that's what's being offered. And it's just either a philosophy that's interesting, just like any other, you know, given philosophy of the day. Like I remember when Rick Warren wrote Purpose Driven Life years ago and it was everywhere. It was all through Hollywood. It was all through, like, it was everywhere. And people were like, oh my goodness, like, this is going to change everything. But what was clear was they saw it as, like, most people saw it as just another philosophy of life. Like, wow, this is really interesting. And you can teach about Jesus. And wow, he's really interesting. And oh, these are some really good principles to live by. And oh, these are, and oh, if I can have a camp, like I can have a tribe. And so I'm going to start speaking this way. And again, I'm not saying that it's disingenuous. It's what people think like, well, that's what we're doing. Because if you don't see it, if you don't know, like if God has not revealed that to you and you don't like see this kingdom as this treasure in a field that's worth everything, then you don't know that other people see that, right? Like you don't know what you don't know. You don't see what you don't see. And so they're like, oh, I guess this is what we do. And so that's why I think we have, especially in the American church, any culture where the church has influence or where there's social advantages to being a part of it, they suffer this same idea, trying to discern because people are just there. And then when people are just there and you're like, well, yeah, Christoph's a part of this too, but Christoph isn't actually seeking the kingdom. Not because Christoph is like some crazy wolf, but just because like, he just doesn't know, like doesn't see it. And so that's how the church then starts to get off track because you have people who are not all in with Jesus and his kingdom. They're not people who are standing there with the disciples going, where else are we going to go? Because when things get hard or there's pushback, then you shift it. And we see that, we see it on every side. We see it with going with the culture and saying like, oh, you know, well, there's pushback over here. Well, you know what? Let's change what, script, like we can say, well, that's not really what scripture says, and we can kind of accept this and do this or whatever. Or you go the other way and you say like, no, it has to look like this, and you push like this agenda to try to force people externally from the outside in to be who God has called you to be, and it becomes about these principles and these ideas. And so all of a sudden on one side, Jesus speaking about sin feels really uncomfortable and we don't like that, so let's not do that. And on the other side, Jesus talks about loving your enemy and returning evil with good. Oh, yeah, you know, sure, in theory, but I don't really like that. Like, we're losing. So now if we're losing, we got to change tactics. And all of that is an indicator of bad soil.
Yeah, well, I think that we are, not I think, we are all created in God's image. And so there's something that resonates within all of us. So believers and not believers that like gravitate towards things that are of God, right? And what I mean by that is there are going to be parts of Christianity that people who are not Christians, they're going to look at it and go, oh, that's beautiful. But it's like cherry picking out these little things and wanting little bits and not the whole kingdom. I think of the Israelites after they are taken out of Egypt, they're freed from slavery in a spectacular way. I was reading Exodus 15 last week, the song of Moses singing his victory, and I just think of all these Israelites gathered together, and it's awesome. And then not too long after that, they're complaining about being out in the desert, even though God is right there leading them. They're complaining about being out there. They're like, I would much rather go back into slavery and have the food that they gave us than to be out here and go into the promised land that God is going to eventually lead us to. You know, and I think within the church, I think, you know, one thing that's just kind of like sitting on me right now is like, there are people who feel guilty about some of the wrong things they've done. There is a moral compass that is built within them. They feel guilty about the things that they've done, and they've been promised forgiveness of those sins. And so they want the forgiveness of the sins, but they don't want to pursue the holiness that comes after that, or the call to holiness that follows after that. And so what we do is we follow Jesus because it's a transaction. If I follow Jesus, right, you know, ask him for forgiveness, he's going to forgive me. But then don't ask me to like make any sort of like tangible changes. I just wanted to feel good about the previous stuff that I did before. And it's like, you can't do that. And like you're saying, there's a blindness to it of like the forgiveness, it is freely given. It is paid for completely on the cross. But for those who have eyes and those who have ears, you hear that and you see that. And the only response that we can give is, I give my life to you. I'd mentioned John the Baptist, you know, just saying he must increase, I must decrease. And I just think that is such a beautiful, succinct, small prayer that any one of us could and should pray. Not that it diminishes who we are, but it's the exact opposite. It actually allows you to be exactly who God has created you to be, because he is being magnified even more in your life. And that comes through seeing, that comes through hearing. And that is something that God does in us. That's something that that's a work that he does. It's a profound mystery, but you see it. And, you know, I think that's a part of the warning. And I had a few people come up to me after the message, and they said one of the things that really resonated with them was, what kind of ground am I being? Asking that question of, what ground am I? And on one hand, I was like, I think that's a really good question to ask. And I think it's one that we should read this and go, yeah, there are some warnings in here, and I want to make sure that I'm not being that person. On the other hand, I go, if you're asking that question, I think you might have eyes to see and ears to hear. Like, I think that's a good barometer of, that's a really good thing to be worried about, and pray about it, and pray that God would reveal whether you're being this rocky ground. And I don't think that's what he's teaching here. I think it's kind of, you're either rocky ground or not. Not that you're changing the type of ground you are from day to day. That's not the point of the parable. But I do think it goes, am I being self-righteous in some aspects? Am I being apathetic in some places? Am I, like, what are areas where I can allow, or not even allow, but what are some areas that I need God to open my eyes more or open my ears more?
Well, I think that's the key right there, is God can change the soil. He can change the type of soil. And recognizing, you know, if he would give you eyes to see that you have been rocky ground, and to see, for example, we have a lot of people who have a pattern of getting really excited about the faith and then walking away, and then coming back and then walking away.
Right.
If they hear that and they say, holy cow, I'm rocky soil. That's what's happening. This sprouts up quickly and then it goes away. It goes away because all of a sudden I get distracted by other things. It goes away because I hit adversity and I can't handle it. It goes away because I, like, why is it going away? And realizing that, okay, well, first of all, I need to pray and ask God to make me good soil so that when the word does land, that it bears fruit. But also realizing that it's typically attached to that idea of being all in with the kingdom. Like, I keep coming back to that because that's what I look for. Like, do you understand that you are surrendering? So, like, you no longer are your own. So, for example, when somebody just says, like, well, yeah, I spoke this way, like, I gave that business what for? Because they, you know, they didn't do what they were supposed to do, and, like, I just won't stand for that. And they think that that's Christian because, you know, to be Christian would be to be an ethical businessman, or to, you know, to serve people well, yeah, and justice. And you're like, well, they didn't do what they were supposed to do, and so I am justified in pronouncing judgment on them, not realizing that it's not actually about whether, you know, they fulfilled their obligation and they built that garage properly, or that they fixed your car right, or anything like that. Like, you're understanding that you are living in a different world, in a different kingdom, where the main point today is not that your car gets fixed, but that you display the image of God and go about his work, subversively bringing the kingdom to a lost and hurting world. And so your response to your car not being fixed properly, or your response to the server not bringing you the right meal, or your response to the person, you know, you know, stealing money from you, basically, or anything like that is a kingdom response, because you're looking at it and you're saying, but I'm for the I'm all about the kingdom. I don't care. This is how we can turn the other cheek. This is how, when Paul says, wouldn't you rather be wronged? Like when believers were suing each other, and he's saying, you're doing this. And in front of non-believers, like, what are you doing? Wouldn't you rather be wronged than, you know, to bring shame on the name, the body and the name of Christ? Like, but that's a mindset.
So, okay. Somebody asked the question though, what am I supposed to just be a doormat?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. All right.
I seriously, that is such a buzz question for so long. Yep. And I've heard so many like tempered, well, no, Jesus wasn't a doormat. Like, I just reject the premise of the question.
Because
if you're asking that question, typically that's coming from a place of like, I want to justify my pride and my unwillingness to be humbled. Because when someone says, am I supposed to be a doormat? I'll just tell you this, kind of like what you said about if you're asking the question of what kind of soil you are, you're already in a good place. If you're asking if you're just supposed to be a doormat, you're probably already in a bad place. Because most people that I know who actually are tempted to fall into actually being what we would think of as the worst case of a doormat, you know, like what you're thinking about of like, where a person is continually abused and they never, you know, they never say anything or they never do like anything or they never stand up for themselves. Like if you're talking about that situation, that person's never asking that question. I've never once had a person say, well, am I just supposed to be a doormat, when they're actually being a doormat? It's always a person who is being puffed up and they want to fight back, and they will not take being seen as silly or being seen as the fool or being seen as wrong. They won't do that. And so they're like, well, I'm not supposed to be a doormat. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like you're already coming at it from an angle. I feel myself getting amped up.
I can tell. But, yeah. You need to hammer on the mechanical keyboard a little bit. It's okay. There you go.
I feel better now. So that's what I mean by that. So like, if you're asking that question, it's a little bit like when people justify their anger with, well, Jesus overturned tables. I've never, like, if you're saying, well, Jesus did overturn tables, you're saying that to a person who is never angry, but like got angry in a situation that we're all going, that was righteous anger. And they're immediately going to feel like, oh, that feels weird. Like I probably shouldn't have said that. And then somebody else is saying like, actually that needed to be said. Right. But if you're doing it to defend yourself, you're probably in the wrong. Right.
Yeah.
Now I might say to somebody, so a person who is in danger of going into a sinful path of what we think of as a doormat, like think about that example, that person is they're not going to be asking for justification to stand up for themselves. They're going to be citing, well, Jesus says I'm supposed to turn the other cheek. That's how that comes out. So I'm dealing with somebody who's being abused and they say, well, I'm supposed to submit and turn the other cheek. And then to that person, I can say, yes, but you're not, like, you're kind of out of context at this point. And so that doesn't mean that we don't pursue justice or healing. It doesn't mean we don't protect people. That doesn't mean that we enable sin, because at that point you're enabling, you know,
for sure,
sin. Yep. So the person who would ask that question is in that, they're in that situation, and they'd be coming at it from the angle of like, well, aren't I supposed to repay? Like we're supposed to bless. And so I'm going to continue to do this. And we might say, well, in this situation, it seems that maybe you're enabling sin and you're causing some real harm to yourself. Like there's another way to honor Jesus in this, versus the person who comes at it and says, well, what am I supposed to be a doormat? They're already revealing where their heart is in it.
Yeah. So it's not just to clarify, you're not saying justice is a bad thing.
No,
you're not saying having a righteous anger, righteous frustration over at the injustices in the world is a bad thing. It's the heart of how we go about it. It's the heart of whose kingdom we're pursuing in that matters. And there are certain, just to clarify, there are certain phrases that you've heard people say that tend to reflect those who do not, are pursuing other kingdoms. Correct. Other than God's.
It's, do you remember when, so yes, and I would say I would say that most of the time our anger is not righteous anger. Like I would just say,
yeah,
like in the high 90 percentile.
Totally.
But righteous anger does exist.
Right.
And anger about injustice does exist, but it is outward focused. And it is not like most of our anger has to do with how someone is hurting our kingdom.
Right.
Well, that, like we're not getting to work on time because the person is driving slow in front of us. Like we lost some of our money. We lost some of our time. We lost some of our, like, you see what I'm saying? Like that's most of our anger. And totally. So like if you're coming at it from that angle of I want to defend my anger, you're probably already in a bad place, you know? And it's a little bit like, and then we ask these questions. That's why, like, well, am I supposed to be a doormat? Why it kind of gets my ire a little bit is, I don't know if you remember years ago when somebody says, well, like, must I, like, do I have to have affections for Jesus or whatever? And John Piper said, that's like asking, like, must I kiss my wife?
Right. Right.
Like, that's a weird question.
It's such a bizarre
like, if
category,
somebody, if I was doing marriage counseling and a guy said to me, like, do I have to kiss my wife? Like, is that required? I'd be like, well,
I feel like there's a lot to unpack
odd,
there.
Right. What an odd question. And so I would say the same thing when somebody is like using the doormat phrase, it's like, okay, you're revealing a lot about that, you know, about that, that assertion. When in that assertion, you are revealing a lot. And what we are saying is the kingdom is worth it. The kingdom is worth it. Like, I don't know, like when Stephen's being stoned, like, what does he do? Like, you know, Stephen doesn't cry out at the injustice of it all. He looks at Jesus and he just, like,
he's comforted.
He's comforted. He just is like, because he sees it as, my main job is to be faithful to Jesus in this moment, not to orchestrate a win. Stephen is not trying to mastermind. Like every movie we've watched, like it feels like when you read the account of Stephen being stoned, it feels a little bit like Robin Hood or Pirates of the Caribbean, and you expect like the merry band of disciples to come and like sweep him away, and they don't.
Right.
And they don't break Paul out of jail, and they don't rescue Peter from being crucified, and they don't because they so believe that God is sovereign, and they so believe that their responsibility is to respond to the sovereign God of the universe in displaying and demonstrating that his kingdom is better, and that's what I want. And so if God puts me in this place today where I go pick up my car and I realize they've done nothing and they overcharged me, it doesn't mean that I don't like pursue, you know, ways of like calling that out. It doesn't mean any of that. But what it means is ultimately I'm like, well, what's going to matter most is that I'm displaying the kingdom. But that matters more than anything. And what happens to us is we show where our kingdoms clash. And when push comes to shove, I've mentioned this before, that often the way we function is I'll try it God's way until it doesn't work to get what I know is right. So I go to the car, I go to the mechanic, I realize that they botched the repair on my car and they overcharged me. And I call that out and I give them a chance and say, hey, it seems like this didn't get fixed. And they say, well, too bad. Whatever I pursue, it has to be done with the mindset of the main objective here is not that this is made right. That's not what pursuing justice is. Like, we have to be careful about that. Pursuing justice doesn't mean, well, I'm going to make sure justice is served at all cost. And that's where we go with it, rather than saying, no, what I'm going to do is I exist for the kingdom. And so God's justice. And so I'm going to proclaim justice. I will point out when there is a wrong that has been done. And I will give opportunity for those wrongs to be made right. But I'm not going to ditch the way of Jesus and being a citizen of the kingdom in order to exact justice. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, I think what you're describing is vengeance. Like, there's a reason why in Romans, Paul specifically says, vengeance is the Lord's, not yours. Basically saying he's the one that makes all things right at the end, not you.
Right. And I can ask him to make that right right now.
For sure.
I could pray, God, please let them see this because I really could use that money and I really need my car fixed.
And they might.
And they might.
And they might not.
And they might not.
Right.
But if they don't, then I'm still surrendering it to God and saying, but I'm gonna trust you. And if the Lord then says, yeah, and the way I want to go about this is I want you to bring a lawsuit because they've been doing this to a lot of people, and I want you to, and you have the means or the ability to bring a lawsuit. Okay. Right. Like it's we try to make it so clear, like black and white, and we try to reduce it down to these principles. Like, should you sue somebody? Should you not? I get questions like that of like, is it wrong to sue somebody because of what Paul says? It depends.
Right, right.
But the heart posture of like, what I want most is the kingdom to be exalted and to be faithful to Jesus. And as I'm doing that and walking in that, I'm like, okay, I think I should take this to the next step. But what we tend to do is at some point we ditch the kingdom of God when it departs from our own personal kingdom. And if it means my pride being hurt, my resources, my kingdom being shrunk at all, me looking like a fool, anything like that is too high of a price to pay. Or my, sometimes as simple as like my convenience being interrupted, my comfort being interrupted. Like if I have to do something I don't want to do or be somewhere I don't want to be, or, you know, give myself in a way that I don't want to give myself, well, then I'm out. Then that's the rocky soil. And when you see that happen in people, then you have to, like, we have to say, wow, now that doesn't mean like every time, like for crying out loud, I choose my own kingdom multiple times a day.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't want somebody to hear this and go like, oh, I just did that. So does that mean I'm rocky soil? I do think there is a fluidity to this as well. When Jesus is just giving this warning, like we don't know, like, yeah, do we change or are we acting like this? You know, you can make the argument of like, well, you're acting like rocky soil, but that's not actually what you are. You know, I don't know. We can dig too deep in that. But what I do think is important is to pause and to reflect and to say, okay, this word has fallen on me and I feel like I'm supposed to apologize right now. And I don't want to apologize because then that's going to make it look like I'm wrong and I don't think I'm wrong. Well, what am I going to do? Like, those are the moments that I determine whether I'm really for the kingdom or not. And I'm just telling you that in my day-to-day life, like, that is a battle all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and that's part of the reason why I referenced Peter towards the end is I can't think of a better representation of somebody who walked with Jesus so closely and yet towards the end of his life denied him, but it was what happened after the denial.
Correct.
That is, to me, so comforting to go, I know I have moments in my life where I deny Christ and I pursue my own kingdoms. I know I have that. The question isn't whether that's the case or not. The question is, how do I respond when, you know, Jesus looks at me after the rooster crows the third time? Like, what's my response? Is my response to start justifying myself? Or is my response to humble myself and go, I was wrong. And I'm going to follow Jesus despite that. And I will say, you know, you were mentioning all those little things that we try to hang on to. I don't think we think there's such a high price to pay, things like our convenience, our comfort, things like that. I don't think I've found a person who, when they have given up those things, have felt that they were such a high price to pay. I think it's quite the opposite. It's actually once they realize that it's actually a very small price to pay, and that pursuing the kingdom, the price that Christ paid was a high price to pay, but that we then follow him and it's good. Like it's worth it. You know, it may not feel amazing in the moment, but it is worth it. And that's what it is.
Well, it costs everything, but it's worth it.
So it costs our life, right?
Right. So it costs our kingdom. It costs our life. It costs everything. But I mean, it would be, you know, not to turn into a sales opportunity, but if I had a business opportunity for you and I said, you got to clean out all of your accounts. Well, whether that's a smart decision or not is based on what the return is. And if you clean out all your accounts and I give you 100 times what you gave me, then you wouldn't look at that as like, well, that was a big price to pay. It was. At the time, it was everything. You gave everything, but when you get 100 times back, you're going to, like, you wouldn't be talking about what a big price it was. You'd be talking about what the investment was, which recently I was listening to a podcast between a Christian and a non-Christian, and the non-Christian basically kind of the old objection of, wait, so can't you just, you can live however you want to live and at the end repent? And those are the kinds of questions, like, yes, yeah, you can. But it shows that this is hard soil. Like, you don't actually understand. I mean, that'd be like being in the worst restaurant in the world and being invited next door to the greatest restaurant in the world that serves just the most amazing steak or whatever. And then you are over here eating like Hardee's,
Anyone eating Hardee's right now is really upset with
it. Like, okay, that's true. Eating the worst thing you can imagine. And the restaurant over there is saying, please come and eat. It's all free. Like, it's an open buffet. We've got prime rib. We've got all these things. Like, come and eat at this banquet, you know, at this table. And people being like, that means I got to get up and walk over there. And you're like, so wait, can I just go over there anytime? So could I eat here? Could I eat this garbage every day for the rest of my life? And then the last day of my life, go over there and eat at that banquet table? Yes. Yeah, you could do that. Okay, well, then I'm going to do that. Like, it's such an odd thing. Like, you wouldn't, who would do that? You would, if you saw what was over there and you saw what you were eating, then the very fact that you're asking the question of, can I just continue to eat this sewage and this garbage and then later go and do that, shows that you don't actually see it.
Yeah,
you don't know.
You're
that
for
it
your
is.
Kingdom.
Yeah, you think that your kingdom. You don't see that that's better. You think it's a mirage. You think it's a practical joke. You think whatever, but you don't see it. Which is why, like, the parable of the great banquet is so powerful. Of they go, he goes and they say, we have other things to do. Basically, they have excuses, and they don't come to the banquet. And Jesus says in the parable, they will never taste the banquet. They'll never sit at this table. And it feels so harsh. Like, well, they just had some other things to do. He's saying the same thing he's saying here in Matthew 13. Even what they have will be taken away from them. Even their little understanding they had of, like, oh yeah, that's something I should be interested in. That's something that does make sense. That's something that is kind of intriguing. Even that will be taken away from them. But to the one who sees this banquet as the greatest invitation and sees this as a treasure in a field, like, to them, as they go and they just give up everything for it, even more will be given to them. They will have an abundance. And that's like my plea all the time with people, is just see that, check that. And if you want to know a really quick litmus test of how do I know? If you're even asking the question, recognizing when your kingdoms are clashing is a big sign. Just recognize that. Forget about even which one you're choosing in that moment, but do you even see it? Because a lot of people do not see their kingdoms clashing at all. They think that they're just lockstep. They think what they want is just lockstep. It's not lockstep for any of us. So if you think that if you think like, oh no, they're in lockstep, they're not. So the first step would be recognize it. Find those moments during the day where you realize, oh, this is what it looks like, where I'm wanting my own kingdom. But this is clearly God's kingdom.
Yeah.
And then choose it.
Yeah. That was in just kind of going all the way back to the beginning to your question or your prompt for the sermon of a passage that has been really formative is, like, I can still remember hearing this parable and feeling that. Mm-hmm. And it was such a weird feeling because in that moment, I thought I was high and mighty. I thought I was, you know, I knew everything. I thought I was the king of my world. And as I'm reading this, or I'm having this parable read to me in a small group, you know, and I'm 14, 15 years old, and we're talking through it and it's getting explained to me, I feel my heart shifting and I go, oh, maybe I'm not right. Maybe I'm off on this. Maybe there's something. And I felt a shift starting to happen. And I'm so thankful for that. I'm thankful for that moment. I'm thankful for this passage, and I'm thankful for God's kindness to be patient with me through that, because, and my small group leader's patience and the rest of the youth ministry at that time's patience with me, because had they not been, maybe that wouldn't have happened, but it did. So, I totally agree with that. I think when you feel that tension, when you feel that clashing, a lot of times you might want to run from that, but instead you got to lean into it. You got to embrace it, and you got to go, okay, Lord, like, what are you stirring in me?
Yeah. And realize that he is with you in that. And there are going to be times where you're going to, like Peter, you're going to fail, and you're going to, and by the way, that wasn't the last time Peter failed. Right? Like, we see Paul confronted him, you know,
right,
and
yeah.
Like when they're apostles, they continued to sin. They continued to fall into the trap of preserving their own kingdom. It's a constant thing. You're never going on this side of eternity. You're never going to fully accomplish that. That's not the idea. And it's not that God is sitting there and so disappointed that you did that yet again or whatever, but he is calling you to something better. Like, he's calling you to the banquet table. It turns out that even though saying I'm sorry and admitting that I'm, like, admitting where I was wrong, even though that feels like a big price, like you were saying, it feels like a big cost, it's not. Like, what you get in return for that in Christ is so much better. And so it's just believing that. And once you see it and believe it, then it's kind of a no-brainer. Like, why would you continue? It's the C.S. Lewis thing if we go on making mud pies in a slum because we can't imagine what is meant by a holiday at the sea, that we're just far too easily pleased. We think that our kingdom is awesome, and we think that we'll be more fulfilled by buying that thing or saying that thing to that person about getting our revenge than we will be about giving justice over to God, being humble, humbling ourselves, giving up things to gain the kingdom. And that's the core of Christianity, is believing that. And I think that's why Jesus speaks in parables. And it is something that we need help in doing. So this is why we're always trying to connect people with one another, so that you can walk this road together, so you can confess that to one another, so you can say, man, I chose my own kingdom today in this moment. And you can have somebody pray for you and have that accountability and that encouragement. It's so important. So we would love to help you get connected. We also would love to take time to answer any questions that you have, whether they're about the sermon or not. So you can always let us know. And we want to hear stories about what God is doing in your life and how he's moving. All of those things you can do by emailing us at connect@faithpastrigo.com or talking to us on a Sunday. We hope that this podcast has been helpful. As always, we appreciate you taking the time to listen. Until next time, grace and peace.